Hi, welcome to the inaugural Interpath podcast to celebrate International Women's Day. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm Robert Brophy. I head up the Media, Sports and Leisure Advisory Division of Interpath within the overall advisory team. And I'm delighted to be joined by a very special guest today, and that is Lindsay Peat. Lindsay has a remarkable life story to tell, which we will come on to, but very briefly, Lindsay has represented Ireland at international level at rugby, football, basketball, and has also got an All-Ireland winning medal with the Dublin Gaelic team. Lindsay, you're very welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Perhaps if I can just kick off with one question for you. International Women's Day, some people would describe it as a token gesture, but is it a lot more than that?
Hugely. I think, you know, to look at it as a gesture might be an undertone of maybe where people value the day itself and how we celebrate and the challenges that women face, whether that's in sport or business or different areas of life. But for me personally, Robert, I think International Women's Day is a great day to celebrate. I think myself, over a 20-year sporting career, it's a lovely way for me to look back and see, for example, the trajectory of especially women in sport. You know, my journey was exceptionally... It was exceptional looking back on it. You know, the people I've met, the teams I played with, the opposition I played with, the countries I visited, and I wouldn't have had those opportunities if it wasn't for sport. And that has probably facilitated my confidence and, you know, goal setting in other areas of my life. It's helped me with parenting. It's helped me with other relationships, even conflict. You know, we take that for granted, you know, in a sporting world. So this huge, huge attribute through sport. And for International Women's Day, to look at where we started 20 years ago to where we are now and the growth of women in sport is just... it's astronomical, and it just fills my heart. So to step back and celebrate today, it gives me goosebumps. And I'm not taking that, you know, it sounds dramatic and a bit emotional, but it's not, because I'm so invested in it, as I know so many more are, you know, and it's lovely.
And just to pick up on that, and I spent quite a bit of my career with World Rugby. I was fortunate enough to meet a lot of outstanding athletes. And the constant message around former rugby players was they missed the camaraderie, they missed the values that rugby gave them in particular, but that was across really, really any sport. Let's look back over the early days, and just to mention that Lindsay is an international rugby player, former international rugby player, former international soccer player, and a former international basketball player. So you've had huge experience in the team environment. You know, what are the highlights for you of your early career, and then moving into, you know, such exalted levels as you've achieved?
I suppose when I was growing up, I had two young men who were my friends. And the good thing for me was the ignorance of, you know, I followed Liverpool and I watched them. You know, we were soccer at first. We used to play 7-up or curbs. And I'm showing my age now, you know, when we were growing up on the street and we played. But, you know, I remember wanting to emulate, you know, Steve McManaman and Robbie Fowler. And I never had those barriers into, you know, I celebrated goals when I eventually got into team situations. And, you know, you're running to the corner flag and sliding down on one knees and celebrate, you know, two knees and celebrating. But I was fiery, Robert. I was fiery. Yeah. I could have easily been told by the teams I played with, you know, to leave. You weren't conducive with the attitudes and the temperament and the personalities that we have. But I'm very thankful to Mark Ingle, who took me under his wing for basketball. He made me captain of his National League team. I was the first captain to ever lift the club's National League Cup, which is the biggest trophy in Irish basketball. And I never thought I would reach international because I was so fiery underage. I wasn't picked at any trial. And I can understand that now looking back. You know, I wasn't part of that team. And I made my international debut at 26. And I think that's a big message for anyone who might be thinking that time is too late, or, you know, they played sport younger and they're too old now. I got my first cap at 26, and I continued on to 2010 until the team was actually pulled. It wasn't my choice. Yeah. I went on to co-captain. I never ever dreamed of that. I never dreamed of playing for my country. I dreamed of it, but never thought it was going to be a reality.
Yeah.
And then I started rugby at 35, when I only took it up as a hobby when I moved house. So I'm a proud Northsider. And I moved to the south side of the city. Good man. I knew I liked you for a reason. And the thing about it is, at 35, I thought, yeah, I just am happy to play club. And I ended up getting 38 international caps. My son, I brought him out at Kingspan. I brought him to Leinster matches. I brought him to my last cap against the USA. And for his son to watch his mother on the international stage. And we recently did Lake Regale with TG Carr, so there was a documentary on me there, and he was part of that. And
saw that. Well done.
It's lovely to
another one of your achievements.
Well, just to mark it as a, I suppose, a role reversal, nearly. Do you know, for?
But just to take you back, I think I'm right in saying that for that first cap for Ireland, it was a very special time because your son arrived, I think, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, 10 days.
Yeah.
Well, 15 days, so first
cap. So just talk us through maybe that challenge, but also the challenge of making it to the international level within with all the challenges that were ongoing throughout your early career.
Well, I had 7 club games before. I came in unexpectedly for the injured world-class Claire Molloy at back row.
Yes.
Had not got a clue of any laws of rugby, and I didn't know anybody. So that was one barrier, that I was very much in a very, very tight-knit group who had come through to a World Cup semi-final against England in 2014. And it was that group who inspired me to take it up.
Yeah.
But it wasn't necessarily a very open space. And I can understand that, why, because I hadn't a rugby background. Then my wife at the time was pregnant. And Barra ended up coming, you know, 2 weeks early. So my first cap was on
your son,
so my son, 14th of November.
Barra Winterpath as well, by the way, just to mention that.
Yeah. Barra, good name, good man. Yeah. So 10 days later, 15 days later, you know, he's coming early and, you know, I'm rushed to the hospital. But I had to juggle camps and...
I was going to say, I mean, time management is something that's mentioned, you know, pretty much every day. I mean... What's your message out there to people who might be listening to the podcast, you know, in terms of what's the best way to time manage? Just learn it as you go along?
No.
Did you have a particular technique?
You have to be realistic,
yeah.
I think, with your time. You have to be able to be adaptable. And I know this is so cliche, Robert. Like, adaptability is so cliche. But so Barra went through every stage of the NICU. So I had to, if I wanted a gym, I had to get up at 6 in the morning prior to the visiting. And then I do my gym. Lucky enough, at the time, we were team gymming at the time. It was very stressful, but the girls were huge support because it meant then I could kind of get, I didn't feel that I was letting anyone down. You know, my wife at the time, I wasn't letting her down, I wasn't letting my son down, I wasn't letting the team down, because I was able to get that in done early. From a mental health point of view, I was able to just, you know, have a good start to my day, because we'd spend all day in the hospital by his side. Never left him. I even actually went out on Stevens's Day to Merrion Square. Now, I mean, it was like a swamp.
Yeah.
And I did my runs between tree to tree.
That's great.
You just did something, you know, because that's what you needed. But we had a long 10 weeks. So I had to be adaptable into what times I could fit. I had to be realistic. Like, so you have to be realistic with your time. There's no point in me saying, oh, listen, Robert, I'm going to be able to do all that, you know, S&C for you. I'm going to do all that. I had to go to the S&Cs and say, I'm stressed. I'm tired. Help me be realistic. Tell me what is the minimum I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to be realistic that I may not make that squad because I'm not up to scratch to anyone else.
Yeah.
So not giving yourself a hard time, be realistic. And the funny thing is, if you are less stressed, you train better. And that was one thing I had to change my attitude around. Like, I wanted to be the best. But
I think all of that, all those messages translate across to the business world as well.
Hugely.
That discipline, but also your perseverance. As you said, you didn't get your first cap until you were 26. Rugby came a lot later for you. I think it shows great determination, and I suppose that's a great message to send out there to others who are of that age and coming through.
Well, yeah, for the basketball, because I was wild, I suppose I knew, and I didn't have a lot of belief in myself, huge lack of self-esteem and self-belief in myself. I'd lost 5 stone. I was very overweight and carrying some personal problems. So when I eventually got there, I looked at Maeve Coleman, who was the coach, and I said, well, I'm not good enough. I looked at the players around me, and the attitude I had was I wasn't good enough. And then I said, you know what? It's an easy out if you want it.
Yeah.
You can easily just, you know,
find
make
excuse.
That excuse if you want. Or you can go to the trial and say, Maeve loves fit teams. That doesn't take skill. Maeve loves endeavour, hard workers. That's not skill. Like, so look at what the coach wants and what you can give her. I came top in the fitness that day, and she finally gave me and I never let her down. When she gave me that first opportunity, I knew she took a chance on me. I didn't let her down.
Funny enough, and digressing slightly, but Andy Farrell was asked, what did he learn from working with Paul O'Connell? Because, you know, it's a two-way street there. And he said, the biggest thing I learned from Paul O'Connell was you can become a much better rugby player without any rugby skill, by just hard work, getting up off the ground really quickly, chasing kicks, you know, all these things. And it's all part of that, I suppose, mindset of hard work, you know. And it sounds like you've got that in spades.
Well, that's probably another example of like, if you're in a new company and you feel, yeah, you've skill-wise, like when I came into that and I said it wasn't an easy setup to come into, yes, the Irish setup initially, the girls were lovely, but slight undertone and unbiased probably hostility because they had worked so hard. So for new faces
and
to
you
come
were a late
in,
arrival, I suppose.
Yeah, and I could understand that
spot maybe
hugely. And yes, I have no issue with that. But what I do, one thing I hoped is that I gave them respect to actually the likes of Ailish Egan, Paula Fitzpatrick, Claire Malloy herself, that I actually went and asked them to help me because I didn't understand. Like, I had a huge, like, you know, everything was accelerated in my learning because Tom Tierney Lord Reston was trying to get me up to speed for that World Cup.
Yeah.
And so don't be afraid to ask for help. That's the other message. Don't be afraid to clock into someone else's expertise, ask for guidance, and you have to look at your flaws and don't be afraid to, without being, you know, I suppose cocky, we're very good at Irish people at keeping people on their ground and, you know, level-headed, you know, don't be afraid to look at what's your skill set and a positive, but also look at your flaws, and you want to increase and bring them on a balance all the time.
What about the change in attitude to women in society, to women in sport, women in business, but particularly maybe from your career, the attitude to women in sport? I certainly know from World Rugby, the investment in women's rugby has dramatically increased. I think that applies across most sports. It's still a lot less, I think, than their male counterparts, you know, particularly, I think, in rugby. But, you know, I think it's no secret that Irish women rugby players went through some pretty tough times, you know. How do you compare your experience with perhaps what's available for them now? And we will talk a little bit about the Olympic opportunity as well. But what about that curve that women's rugby went through over the last 10 years or so?
I suppose it was up and down. I suppose you saw what was achieved in 2014, and then obviously we come down to the last game of that 2017 Six Nations. We're in the, you know, the mix for the Grand Slam, and then we had a very poor, you know, home World Cup, and we were as disappointed as everyone else. And to come eighth and just outside those automatic qualifying places was, you know, I know I stood there, one of many players, to vow that my job was now to get Ireland back into that. What was at the time 2020 World Cup, and obviously with COVID knocked it, but the thing about it is it you want it more, and then what you want more for yourself, you want exposure to higher, you know, training facilities, to better training facilities, and then on the cusp of that you can see what the men are doing on the side and you can see the talent they have, and I suppose like what they've achieved over the last number of years, you don't want to take from that, but you want to match it.
Yeah.
So,
but they have received, I think it's fair to say, huge investment.
Huge.
And they've justified that investment hands over, I think, you know, and it's inspirational, I think, for the entire country to see what's happened there. But I suppose it demonstrates the opportunity that's out there. Look at the women's football team. I know they lost last night, but they had a record attendance in Tala. And the future is bright, in your opinion, for women's sport in this country?
Hugely. Like, look, the girls went to their first World Cup for the soccer there in Australia. And the thing about that is historic, that Ireland, for the women, their first World Cup, but that World Cup itself was historic. The fact that it actually made a profit, which was doubted. I think they had the highest attendance at the games in 1.35 million. They had the highest, I think Matilda's semi-final against England was the highest viewed of any programme in Australia at the time. So to look at these margins, to look at the Emirates just across the sea, you know, because I know obviously Europe didn't buy into the buying rights, and that's the business side of things that you're more.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not quite sure about the profit piece, but we'll go with it anyway.
I think they broke even anyway. There wasn't a loss anyway. It wasn't a huge amount of
huge
profit.
Improvement, and given the location, it was a big achievement.
Well, I think the issue for women's sport as a marketable product, and as a jury expert, you can correct me, I think it is probably hard to get investment when it's not a product that can make you money like the men's can. Obviously, when World Rugby started, it went from 4 million to 500 million, am I right, with
France recently? You're right. You're absolutely right. So, you know, if you compare the two, I suppose, sports, men's and women's rugby or men's and women's football, you know, both of those women's iterations are far, far younger. And
hugely.
The growth in US football, the growth in UK football is absolutely staggering. It's the fastest growing sports opportunity that's out there. And, you know, I don't think it's any secret that broadcasters are very excited to buy into women's sports. So that's got to reflect well on on where women's sport is going, and I think it's a great achievement.
Yeah, but even I think hockey back in 2016, I think for one of the women's hockey matches, BBC had to extend out the 10 o'clock news because the match was going on. So I mean, it's not an overnight thing right now. It's just that some sports are taking off so quickly, but there's so many positives even going back to that Olympics, and obviously we're coming up to Paris now soon, where we have the women's sevens coming in and the men's sevens.
We'll come on to that in a second, but can I just maybe talk about your personal life, if
yes.
you don't mind? And look, I know that you announced publicly that you're a member of the gay community mm-hmm. at age, not until the age of 30. Mm-hmm. I think, was that a very difficult thing to do at that point in time, or maybe what were the challenges like between 20 and 30? Living through that, and was that a contributing factor? You mentioned some personal challenges, you know, so was that a big issue for you?
Yeah, personally, I suppose you don't want to be different, you know, and we talk about, and this is the probably undertone with the growth of women's sport, and you know, there's just an inherent bias sometimes, and mm-hmm. and at that time there was this, you know, the social norms, we call them, and it was, yeah. you know, the makeup of what was predominantly a heterosexual relationship, getting married, having kids, and for me, I struggled for that because deep down I knew I was different, you know. Yeah. So all those demons and all those fears, you know, stop you from coming out and yeah. being honest with people. And I'm probably too honest at times.
Yeah.
And to carry that, what I felt was a lie, or, you know, a truth that I wasn't telling people about, really weighed deep on me, you know. So I felt that was tough. And then it made the announcement at my 30th surprise birthday party in Parnell's. And it was one of the biggest weights off me. And I suppose I could be finally comfortable in my own skin, but
Fantastic.
It was on the back of probably the biggest fear of not being accepted.
Sure.
And
yeah.
no one bat an eyelid, to be honest, Robert. They all went on about their night danced, and kind of I was somewhat disappointed and somewhat delighted.
I was going to say, I mean, and that's not that long ago, and it's great to hear how accepting all of society was, and I would feel it's got even better since then from that point of view, in terms of the I don't even want to use acceptability, but I think you know what I'm saying, that it's not remotely an issue. Most importantly, I don't think that fear of being different, I think that has dissipated significantly in society now.
Yeah, and look, we're talking about women in sport, and I suppose I understand the needs of both being a woman in sport and being a gay woman then mm-hmm. personally. So obviously there's a huge push for diversity and inclusion, because what people want to be seen is valued and seen. And that's
yeah.
what this comes down to. We have International Women's Day because women in society want to be seen and valued, and they want to be taken seriously,
yeah.
no more than myself. And I hate to be honest, bringing it back to gender, but until you understand and walk in the other person's shoes, you don't know what barriers they come up against. And that's why days like today are hugely positive, and they're hugely important to know what good work we've done and celebrate that.
I totally agree with that. I think that diversity extends across boardroom tables,
oh,
you know,
hugely,
and
yeah.
we've seen the enormous growth in C-suite executives being female, but also boards representation. That in turn translates itself into more investment back into sport or other activities or the arts that those members of the board are more interested in. And I think it's achieving a much better balance in the business world as well as in the sporting world.
Well, I think if we remove gender for now, what you want is a diverse range of people and their thinking and what angles they come from, and the more variation in the angles that we can achieve, I think the greater the decision. Do
yeah.
you know what I mean? And
absolutely.
It just brings just greater insight and a more rounded decision and a more beneficial decision, both for the people that are involved around the table and then whoever's going to impact from that. So I think it's important just to get very, very different thinking people, to get just everyone's opinion on it. And I think it makes for a greater conversation. It makes life more exciting. And I think it's good to have women on boards, as for, you know, if we're talking a reverse, if it was a mainly dominated women's side of things, you'd want men on the board because you want their input, their thinking,
think
their personalities, and that's where
it
comes down
to. Put it. You
yeah.
want diversity, I think, and that's very true. Okay, let's talk about the future a little bit, and I think you know a number of the Irish women's sevens national mm-hmm. international team who are heading to Paris. They are genuine medal prospects. They have, for everybody's information, they recently won a major World Seven Series event in Australia, beating some of the very best teams in the world. And on a good day, they might well be Olympic prospects.
Hugely. I have no doubt in this team. I've played with Stacey a long time, Lucy Mulhall, the captain, Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe, who is like world class and is knocking records, you know, every tournament. But they're what we call, I suppose, the OGs of the game, who've been there since the infancy of the programme, and I've come all the way through, and to see them and look at the likes of who else have we got? Emily.
Amy Lee Crow.
No, we have Amy Lee, Emily Lane, you know, Kinlan. There's so many there, big names. Vicky Wall, who's transferred over. So, listen, there's phenomenal athletes there, and I'm only naming but a few, but they're an exciting prospect, and one who have, they're just getting better and better and better. And obviously, they're just coming off the back of Vancouver there. So, they've loads of tournaments in the World Series to get things right. But listen,
it's great. It's so exciting. We've one of our own Olympians in Interpath, and
he's
Adam
a
Levy,
good man, Adam Levy.
Who had the honour of representing Ireland over in Tokyo. And, he said he had a great experience, particularly after the event was over. But we'll leave that out of the podcast.
Listen, we won't say now, yet.
But, I mean, when you look at it, the opportunity out there for Rashidat Adeleke, we've got Leona Maguire, who's a real medal prospect. We've got so many outstanding female athletes, I think, representing the country now, who've been given an important and strong opportunity by Irish sports bodies to develop their talents, you know. How important is that investment in success, in your view?
It's hugely, like, if we talk about, you know, well, Katie Taylor is the founding, I suppose.
The
one
Incomparable.
Of the Incomparable, but if we start, I suppose, it was her who took, you know, her idea of bringing women's boxing to the Olympics. Yeah. She took it to the Boxing Council. She fought for that because that was her passion. And sometimes we miscue that this, what is passion, has to always be a fight. It doesn't. We're allowed to have conversations, and that's, conversations are good.
Yeah.
You know, they extend things out. We if we didn't talk, we didn't have tough conversations, we know ideas, we wouldn't be sitting here.
Yeah.
So the thing about it is, like, she, look where she came from, look at the backing she has needed to get to the top. And she'd be first to thank everyone along her journey from that starting mark up to the top. And it's so important for her exposure, for her media. The foundations at the start, and people who believe and invested, or propelled her to go on the journey. Adeleke is, what an unbelievable athlete. Like, she's going to break hearts and records at this Olympics, I have no doubt. Her confidence, the school she's in Texas,
yes,
and her exposure to the coaching and the competition there, and the investment of the, and the setup of the US athletics over there,
but
is
what an
huge
inspiration for other young athletes coming through. And
I love to watch her, and I'm not a, you know, athletics isn't my obviously foundation.
No.
I'm an athlete, but I absolutely love watching her. I love watching her run. I love her post match. I love her post race interviews, that she's just like hard on herself but still so confident. I love that balance with her. Mona McSherry in the swimming, you know, so the list is endless of, you know, athletes. Kelly Harrington the same, bringing home Olympic gold, you know. I passed by her home street, and I was wondering why one of the bins were painted gold, and I was like, you know, Kelly is gold. So they're just huge, momentous, inspirational women who still inspire me, like 20 years on, still inspire me, still inspire a huge, like, you know, they still have such an influence on the sporting world today, and I hope they know that.
Absolutely. And I think it's worth mentioning the Department of Culture, Media, Sport, Arts and the Gaeltacht, I think is the full title of Catherine Martin's department. not facing their challenges at the moment, but they did produce a report yesterday that said that TV coverage, broadcast coverage of women's sport has increased from 2% to 30%, approximately 28-30% in the last 10-12 years or so. And their stated recommendation is that that should rise to 50%. And I think we both agree they're absolutely right. Now, there's a commercial element to that. But I think you'd agree that having any sport, including athletics, including hockey, including tennis and some of the less I suppose, covered sports, having that available makes a huge difference to the athlete, but also to the commerciality, I suppose, of that sport.
Yeah, and I briefly read some of the reports from Lidl's new campaign, say, just on the ladies' football side of things. And the campaign is to try and get more people actually at the games, because there's still so many people don't attend. So it is so important. If people aren't attending live events, that's where the pressure comes on the media to actually help with the exposure.
Yeah.
Like, I think 74% of those who were interviewed still say, like, it's a shame that people don't go to the sporting event. But of that, still 54% of those who go are men. Do you know? So we still need
that
women to step
is still
up.
To change.
Hugely. And I think you will notice that a lot of the women's sporting events have a lot of families, because the dynamic is women you know, want to have families. Not all of them, but like there are families involved. So we have to make it family days and get people on board, make life easier, make the stadiums more accessible, make the tickets cheaper. If you're buying a family ticket, Robert, and you're buying for two adults and three kids, like that could be a whole, you know, that's an awful lot of money. So yeah, we have to make it maybe deals, maybe give do competitions. But it just
make
on the
it
back
more,
of that.
Make it easier for families
make
to
it
attend.
Easier,
yeah.
But it doesn't take away at how important commercially, because one of the negative sides of things where people said there wasn't enough on telly, but they felt it was much more readily available. They just thought it was at peak times that men's sport were on. But like for it to increase from like by 28% over the last 10 to 12 years, it's huge. So we have to take the positives of what the how much growth has been there. There's still work to do,
yeah,
but we're on a good path, you
and,
know.
And it's worth recording that the most single significant contributing factor towards the success of a single event being the Super Bowl was a female named Taylor Swift. So there
Listen,
you go.
I
in
know.
Terms of how much value she added, as if NFL needed any value.
No,
added
they
to
didn't.
It, you know. But what do the next 10 years look like for Lindsay Peat?
Well, I'm hoping to finish on a high with Railway Union, my club.
Oh.
We're sitting pretty in second, but there's a chasing pack of old Belvedere and
BlackRock.
Oh, listen, yeah. they're chasing at our heels, and we're trying to chase you well. So look, I'm doing a bit of coaching there at Scrum now. I'm just helping out, I suppose, more guidance than coaching, and I'm playing number eight, so I've been promoted or demoted, depends where you're coming from.
Good.
After that, it's always a new challenge for me, Robert. So I always stay in sport. It's given me so much. It's obviously I mentor my son with hurling and football, and not the easiest probably relationship for him because I'm so competitive and he's so chilled. But just to continue in, be very chilled, relaxed, help wherever I can, really try and give back inputs, whether that's talk to young women, to remind mothers that they are mothers, but there's still people who need to be back in. And I had a chat with Marie Crow, who's doing the Mothers for Others at St. Jude's, and she said the amount of people who are huge business women who come back to them and need to believe in themselves. You know,
yeah,
we need to transfer the belief from sport to business and business to sport. And you have to remember who you are. There's huge parts of your personality that, you know, encompass different areas, and you need to be able to, you need to be filling them all, you need to be feeding them all with fuel.
But to finish, and last question, but the future for women's sport is bright. The future for the society from a women's point of view is bright as well.
Yeah, if we have the likes of yourself and companies who are willing to have these and invest, and other sporting organisations that look at areas that are like Try Stop Us by World Rugby was fantastic as part of their 21-25 growth. It was the quickest.
Very successful.
Very, very successful. And it's conversations, it's having goals. It's
the marketing campaign.
Yeah,
yeah,
but
in advance of World Cup 21, yeah.
The marketing campaign, you know, we have to look at it. That is hugely positive because you're looking at areas, World Rugby are looking at areas of where we can grow the game.
Yeah.
And that's essential of, yeah, it's really good here. It's really good in Ireland. It's really thriving. We've got to work in here. But what about the likes of Kenya and Brazil? Brazil are great at sevens, where we do the 15. So again, it's just lovely conversations. It's goals. It's areas. It's where we need more investment than others. It's about actually help. It's just never afraid to ask for help. Never afraid to give your help. And I think to anyone who's been helped in who's helped out in, you know, propelling women's sport, I thank you. Don't give up on us. It's a great area to be in. And I think it's a really good, it's going this way. Long may it continue.
Well, Lindsay, thanks very much for your time. I can see you're very comfortable with a microphone. I know you spent a bit
you make me comfortable.
Time. really, really, on behalf of Interplant, really appreciate you joining the podcast today. And look, the very best of luck for the future with everything.
Thank you for having me.